Good morning, everyone. Happy December. And thank you so much for joining me. This is Lanisha Duke. Almost said Lanisha Williams. That's who I used to be. And we are on KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and also streaming on the web at coastradio.org. That introduction song, Jingle Bells, was recorded by my mom, Gwen Phillips, on her CD, It's Christmas, Rejoice. And I always look forward to this time of year because my mom recorded a Christmas CD and we love Christmas music. And so I get to listen to it all the time. So hi, Mom, wherever you are, thank you for giving us the gift of your Christmas CD. So what a ride 2020 has been. If you're like me, we have had an extraordinary opportunity to reassess our priorities, not just as individuals, but collectively in community. And talking about race in rural communities this year has taught me so much about myself as I've tried to learn more about myself, what I've been taught, how I've lived my life according to what I've been taught, and trying to rediscover new truths or truths that have been around, but we didn't have access to it because it was put into us that the color of our skin made us different. And I think the most important thing that I've learned this year that's been reinforced for me is that the color of my skin doesn't make me different. And so how do we really begin to unlearn some of the things that we've taken as truth and begin to identify what's truly true for us as it relates to race? The number is 503-325-0010. I received a video that was shared with me by a friend that talks about racism as a public health crisis. And it was done by Dr. Kamara Phyllis Jones. And her work focuses on naming, measuring, and addressing the impacts of racism on the health and well-being of our nation. And I wanted to share with you what she defined, how she defined racism, and the three levels of racism that she's studied. So Dr. Jones defines racism as a system of structuring opportunity and assigning value based on the social interpretation of how one looks. And that's what we call race. She then goes to identify three levels of racism. The first one is institutionalized, and it's what we consider systemic racism. She defines that as the differential access to the goods, services, and opportunities of society by race. That looks like housing, education, employment, and income, access to care and medical facilities, clean environment, and then information, resources, and voice. This sort of touches also on the association between social class and race, but she notes that it's important to realize that even if we ended, let's say we ended hunger for everyone, and we were able to close the gap in social class and economic class, that there would still be a divide by race. And that's why it's important for people. You might hear the term centering around racial equity right now, because if we center, let's say, around health equity or economic equity, race can still be left out of that conversation unless it's intentionally brought in. I have had a couple of people recently tell me, why keep talking about race? I keep adding to the problem and not the solutions by having these conversations. And I offer to you that it's really a time for us to reflect. I don't think that there's anything wrong talking about race. I think it's important to understand what racism has done to this country since its inception, and really looking at how do we come out of the systemic racism that has plagued this country and affected all of us, even as some have benefited from us, it has negatively impacted all of us and the whole well-being of not just our country, but the world. Again, the number to call in is 503-325-0010. Call in and let me know what 2020 has taught you about race. What are some of the things that you've learned, and what are some of the things that you've unlearned? Dr. Jones continues to explain the next level of racism as personally mediated racism. And that is the differential assumptions about the abilities, motives, and intents of others by race. That looks like the differential actions based on those assumptions, which brings us to prejudice and discrimination. That can look like police brutality, physician disrespect, shopkeeper vigilance, waiter indifference, and teacher devaluation. The last that she mentions is internalized racism. And this is the acceptance by the stigmatized races of negative messages about our own abilities and intrinsic worth. That leads to self-devaluation. What she didn't coin this phrase, but she uses it, called the white man's ice is colder syndrome, and also the resignation, helplessness, and hopelessness, and accepting limitations to our full humanity. I was very curious about the white man's ice is colder syndrome. And Dr. Jones says that she first heard about that term. Her parents used it back in the 50s and 60s. And what it is basically you have two black men, two black women together, and they have some stuff, and they'd rather go to where the white people have their stuff because they think that it's better because it's the white man's and not from their own community. And the resignation, helplessness, and hopelessness that comes out of the stigmatized notion that one is not better because of the color of their skin, it really does play out in not just how people of color can see themselves, but how they see the world. And I know for myself, I this year have been trying to reassess some of the things that I've been afraid of over the course of my lifetime that has been conditioned in me because of some of those negative messages about my own intrinsic worth that's only based in the value of, in the color of my skin. And so I think it's really important as we begin teaching our children and engaging with each other as we talk about race. Again, it's such a hard topic to talk about, but one that's so important. It's one that can bring out so many different kind of emotions, and even trigger trauma for some people. And I think that we are in a wonderful time to really begin to dig deep. I use that term a lot. The deeper we go, the better we grow. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for us to dig deep and consider where we have all been part of the problem and where we can all be part of the solution. And I believe it's in opening our hearts to learn something new, to accept something new, and to be something different. I really appreciate the fact that there's so much information. Thank God for Google. And it looks like we have a phone call. So I'll let you on. Good morning. This is Lanisha. Welcome.
Lanisha, hi. Good morning. This is Rick. Is Graham in, please?
Good morning, Ricky.
Oh, hey, Rick. I'm going to have to call you back, okay?
Okay. You guys on the air?
Yeah.
Have a great one. See you. Bye.
Oh. False alarm. All right. Well, Graham, what do you think about 2020 and some of the stuff that even you've learned about race?
I think the thing that comes to my mind is that we just can't, as white people, can't turn a blind eye anymore, and can't fall victim to what's been called white fragility. There's a book called White Fragility that got passed around a bunch. And that concept, I think, makes a lot of sense. But ultimately, just that it's time for a change.
Definitely. That's one of the arguments we hear, you know, slavery was so long ago. We're so beyond that. Or that was my ancestors. It has nothing to do with me. Yet at the same time, the system is still being perpetuated, right? And so even though it happened so long ago, there are things that have happened with even within my lifetime. We think about some of the laws that have been put in place for civil rights. I think about often the Supreme Court decision that was given to make it legal for people of different races to marry. The Loving Couple took that to the Supreme Court in the early 70s. I want to say it was 71, and I might be mistaken by a year or two. But to consider that every single part of my life has been a decision by the Supreme Court to make me equal and to make me free to be able to live my life. And I think we're still living in the residue of so much of that, because one of the other things that I like to point out is we can change laws, but we can't change people's hearts with those laws. And it's really time for us to really reach people's hearts so that we don't hopefully need more laws, because I'm not sure that there's any more laws that could be passed to make folks be right. And not to really make folks be right, but to undo the system. And I want to talk about that. People are not our enemy in this. We are connected to one another. And there are barriers that are up to keep us from fully living out that potential of our human connection to one another. But the system, to me, is the one thing that continues to perpetuate and keep systemic racism alive. It keeps the conversation alive. What does that look like? Well, it wasn't that long ago, and I'm not even sure it was legal for my grandparents to be born in a hospital. And my grandparents were born in 1919 and 1920. Definitely no, it wasn't legal for my great-grandparents to be born in hospitals in this country because of the color of their skin. And when we look at access to hospitals and to access of care, a lot of that has to do with the systemic part of the segregation by race in being able to even go to the hospital. The relationship between doctors and patients, when you look at the African-American population and some of the stuff even that I've had to overcome as far as fear about actually having the right care, a doctor that actually cares about me, the person, and will really work with me to uncover and explore what's going on with me, which could be different because of genetic factors that may not have anything to do with my skin color. But unfortunately, so many of the things that they say health-wise that I'm predisposed to because of the color of my skin, I am starting to question that and really ask people, especially in the medical profession, well, what's the real answer? If being Black has no effect on anything else about me, if it doesn't affect my biology, then why is it that all of the medical information still points to health determinants based on the color of my skin? So if African Americans are more predisposed to high blood pressure, if it's not because of the color of my skin, then why is it? And I think there's so many of those cultural norms that we've been forced to adopt that now it's the time to begin working our way out of it and really looking at what could be some of the other causes that makes me predisposed, my family predisposed, and others in our community who have just a heavier dose of melanin in their skin, right? I grew up thinking that there was so much of me that was solely based on the color of my skin. For example, my husband and I laugh all the time about having rhythm, right? I love to dance. I grew up watching my brother on American Bandstand and Soul Train when I was younger, and music is a really big part of our family. And to really be able to unpack that, well, maybe it's not the color of my skin that gives me a better ability to clap on the 2 and 4 beat as opposed to the 1 and 3 beat. It's not the color of my skin that I can sing even, you know? And so it's really hard to now be able, it's hard and easy at the same time, because I think, again, we're at this place where we have to take stock of what we've been taught. And it's hard because I've lived that as my truth. And it's hard to now discover that I've been living a lie in so many different areas of my life based on what I was taught. I was teaching a class last night, and one of the questions I asked was, do you remember when you learned about race in school? What was taught about history? And 2020 has brought out so much of history that has been forgotten, even as there's been great debate on being able to continue to uphold history that that helped with the divide of race and keeps that stigma going and that power structure alive. Again, this is Lanisha Duke with Rural Race Talks. We are on KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. The number to call in is 503-325-0010. We're going to take another. Oh, go ahead, Graham.
Well, I think I was just going to see what we could do to encourage folks to call in to speak to your first question about what has 2020 taught you about race this year. And, you know, I mentioned the concept of white fragility, and the other one that comes to mind is white privilege. And we don't really fool ourselves here that the majority of our audience is white, and we're grateful to you for bringing your voice to the radio. And I think everyone is enjoying listening to you, which is why there's no calls, but this is,
yes.
This is a group participation effort. And so I want to ask the question, if we can just go a little more specific, what is an example of white privilege that you can think of that you've enjoyed in your life, or is there an example of white fragility that you've come across? I think we're looking for some specifics here. So as Lanisha said, 503-325-0010 is the number to call. And did you want to cut to some music while folks think of their answers?
Sure. There's another song on my mom's Christmas CD, if you don't mind just playing that for a little bit, and then we'll come back.
Here's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself
Welcome back, everyone. Again, that was my mom, Gwen Phillips, off her album, It's Christmas Rejoice. We have a caller, and I want to welcome you. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. This is Tom in Seaside. And
hi, Tom.
I guess what I've been wrestling with lately is probably I'm a little idealistic here, but it's just the term people of color. It's like there's a white benchmark, and then you've got the people of color. And to me, you know, all the people that say that term are well-meaning, and there's not a hint of racism in their blood. But still, to me, it's like it hints of a separation. And where the idealistic part comes in me is, you know, we're all the same. It's just the melanoma in our skin. And you could even say I was a person of color because I get a really dark color in the summertime, even though I'm white. So I don't know if you catch my drift, but to me, I've just been having trouble with any kind of terms that suggest a difference, you know, Japanese, Indian, you know, anything that has to do with color. It, to me, it speaks of separation with somehow white is the benchmark, and then if you're anything else, you're something different, and I don't think there is a difference. So that's my comment.
Well, thank you, Tom. You actually bring up some great points, and I agree with you. I have struggled this year with how to even call, what to call myself. I've tried to start going from a black person to a brown skin girl. You know, one of my jokes I've said for years is I don't understand how I'm considered black when I'm not black. Like, we know what black looks like, and I do not, I'm not black. And not, you know, not that there's anything wrong with it, but I am, my skin color is brown if there's a color for it. And I agree with you that it does add to the divide. I myself was caught off guard hearing the term BIPOC for the first time this summer.
Yeah.
And I kept going, I don't mean to interrupt you,
and I'm not going to talk forever, but one thing that got me to thinking is I was working over at this beautiful woman's house, and clearly she was some kind of South Island, you know, Polynesian or whatever. And she had a picture of her beautiful grandchild on the wall. And I said, boy, she's exotic, or, you know, something like that. And I, really, truly, what I was fishing for is what nationality that person was. But she thanked me and she said, well, at least you're not like most people that say, what are you? And, you know, even those people don't mean anything bad by it, but for God's sake, we're all human. I mean, that's all I have to say.
Thank you so much, Tom. Happy holidays to you.
You too. Bye.
So let's talk about that, because I did, when I heard the term BIPOC, and for those who don't know what that means, it is Black and Indigenous People of Color. I had no idea that that was a term that had been floating around. And it was one that I was like, it's just another label and another box that I'm being forced into. I ask people, you know, I have a name. My name is Lanisha. There are so many different ways that I identify outside of the color of my skin. And it's going to take a lot of intention for me and for those who are really looking to not just move away from this conversation, but to really be able to even destroy so much of the mindsets that have been created and the labels and the boxes that have been put in because of the color of our skin. And part of the problem is some of how we're labeled is attached to dollars, right? And so we look at data, we look at who's marginalized, who's disadvantaged, and then we tie it to money. And so we even have to look at how we begin looking at data and reassessing that as well. We have another caller. Welcome to the air.
Yeah, hi. My name is Martin, and I have a bit of a speech problem because of brain damage I've had recently. But, you know, I think this year the biggest thing that happened to me was being surprised by how much prejudice is still in the world. I've been living in Miami for a long time, and I came to live here, and I'm just surprised that there's so much out there. I learned a lot of prejudice growing up, but I came out gay when it wasn't cool. And I've learned to be different. And it's odd to me that we can enjoy the diversity of the Amazon rainforest, but we don't enjoy our own diversity. And that's just, we won't ever get ahead until we just enjoy who we are.
I agree. Thank you so much, Martin, for that. I definitely agree that our differences should be celebrated and not what divides us. And I think for me personally, I know I've always been different, and it wasn't the color of my skin that made me different. It maybe added to it, but you know, just inside of me, I've been different. I have a different thought process. I'm a free spirit. I try to really live my life intentionally that way. And I think that part of our problem is there's such a stigma around really being who you are.
Yeah.
Because people judge us, right? And mm-hmm. I think if more people got away from some of the superficialness that we see, we could really get to the heart of the matter that, man, you're different,
well, yeah,
I'm different,
you know,
we're all different.
We all have similarities and we all get differences.
Yep.
And the differences are probably pretty important in the grand scheme that we don't see. And so we need to think to celebrate who we are. I don't know if white supremacists are important right now, but at some level, the consciousness does know. And so my job is just to be here and be who I am.
Yes. Well, thank you for living in your authentic truth. I hope that more people begin to do that. But it takes a reassessment, right? And sometimes, like for me, it was really identifying other people's thoughts in my head and mm-hmm. me looking at myself through other people's lens and then saying one day, no, I don't have to live based on other people's expectations of me. I can create those own expectations.
No, we don't have to control it. Life does that just fine. It's been doing that for a long time, and we just need the best of us to come forward so life can build with that, and we'll be just fine.
Yes, I agree with you. Thank you so much for calling in, and happy holidays.
Yeah, have a good day.
All right, we have one more caller. Good morning.
Good morning, Lanisha. This is Victoria down in Nehalem.
Yes, hi.
Well, I've been thinking about your initial question. What went on in 2020 about reassessing our situation, about race, racial differences, if there are, et cetera. And what kept coming to mind was my husband, Anthony, was raised in urban New Jersey, and he was well aware of being raised in a subtly racist family, like don't bring any black girlfriends home, even if they are the ones who taught you how to dance. And what's happened in this last year is it's opened a dialogue between him and various family members. One of his double cousins, a woman, has lived a pretty privileged life, and she basically said to him, is there such a thing as white privilege? And he was trying to explain what he believed there was, that it was. And when I thought about it, I don't even know if she knows anyone who isn't Italian-American, much less African-American or Chinese or anything else, because she has a very small bubble always. And then he talked to his blood sister, Judy, and she said, oh, yeah, you know, if I go into a department store with a woman friend of mine who's black, we go in and I don't get any scrutiny at all, and she does. She's being watched as if she's going to be a shoplifter. So it really was diverse in terms of his family's response. But the fact that they were actually talking about it, something that hasn't been discussed for forever in his family, is a difference. And his double cousin, who tends to watch Fox News and doesn't believe in climate change and isn't sure if the you know, the pandemic is a real thing. Just to get her to even think about the question was a breakthrough, let's put call it that. And then thinking about my own life, I mean, I was raised in a, you know, two-bit towns in the Lower Columbia region, and, you know, the idea of somebody being different was the two Filipino-American kids in my high school, and that was it. That's all we got. And I thought, well, you know, how come I came up with a different, somehow different set of values, even though I really didn't have much opportunity? And then I realized that, in fact, when I went away to university and I lived in the Bay Area, I lived in Berkeley, and every kind of person was on the street. And I thought it was a joyous, wonderful potpourri of people. And it was a time when you got eye contact from everyone. And yeah. I worked with at the university with diverse people and heard their stories. I heard stories about being interned in a Japanese prison camp. I don't know what else to call it. And it really opened my eyes as a young person. Yeah. So I think some of it is what we expose our youth to. And the more diverse experiences they have, the more they can have compassion, empathy for other people's paths. So anyway, it just got me kind of thinking, like, how did I come out of this differently? And it doesn't make it. You'd think a person raised in urban New Jersey would have a much more diverse worldview than a person from a town with 1,300 people. So anyway, that's my
yes.
thoughts. It's been an interesting time, that's for sure. And unfortunately, it's probably going to continue for a while to be interesting because we've got some strange stuff going on. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you so much, Victoria, for calling in. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. Yes.
Bye.
Bye. All right, friends. So that leads me to a good point. To a good transition. But before I do, I just want to say to that point, I would probably say my husband is in that boat too. This year, he's probably had more conversations, even if it's just with me, about race than any other time in his life. And he grew up in Wheeler, Oregon, here on the coast in Tillamook County. And we laugh about it all the time because his experience is so vastly different than mine. And so many people were shocked that we got together because we are two of the unlikeliest people that should have ended up together. And yet we make a wonderful match. And our time in Utah, I think, was really a good learning lesson for my husband in race relations, because he noticed how different people looked at us when we were together versus when we weren't and when he was by himself. And also even when we were looking for a place to live last year, I was calling places to be able to go and look at them when he got off work one day, called, made sure there was availability, we could look. And as soon as we went to those same places when he got off of work and we walked in together, there were no places available. And so as much as we want to say that discrimination and racism, it's still there and it's still hurtful. So what have you experienced like Victoria when she talked about visiting the Bay Area and seeing diversity for the first time? Does travel solve racism? Education solve it? I definitely think education is a big part of it. I'll talk about a time when I saw diversity in a much different way for the first time. So I grew up in Southern California. I'm very thankful that I consider where and how I grew up to be very diverse. I grew up in Redondo Beach, and even though Redondo Beach wasn't diverse, LA County, Southern California, I grew up going to the oldest established Black church in Los Angeles that was founded by a former slave, First AME Church in Los Angeles. And so I'm very thankful Rosa Parks was a member of our church when she lived in Los Angeles. And we just actually celebrated the 65th anniversary of Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat on the bus this week And I want to say last week was the anniversary of Ruby Bridges entering that grade school and integrating the school that she did. And so I also want to just pay homage to those who have spearheaded this way before I started this platform. But I'll never forget going on a Black college tour my senior year in high school. It was the first tour that was put on by my church. And there was a big group of us that went. We started, I believe we started in Baltimore at Morgan State University and traveled around. We went to Virginia, to Hampton University, to North Fork State University. We went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. We went to North Carolina Central, North Carolina A&T College. And I'm trying to think, we went to Morehouse, Clark Atlanta, Spelman in Atlanta. And there's a school in Alabama I think it was either Alabama or Arkansas we went to. Anyway, my point is, I had never in my life seen that many brown-skinned people just living their lives, like not congregating for church, not congregating for something. But the first time I went to Atlanta, my mind was blown. I had never seen so many brown-skinned people around in my life, just normal day activities. Even growing up in LA, it was very rare even to see a brown-skinned person driving past you on the freeway. And in Atlanta, I almost got whiplash, I promise you, because I had never seen so many people that looked like me, but that were doing, positions of power, in running stuff, and just like it was normal. And I was like, whoa. And I think about that even often now, because part of the systemic racism in this country has been separating us geographically, right? We look at even the political divide, and again, the urban versus rural divide, how redlining grouped people of color into certain areas. And that's where the families generationally have stayed. Not that there's anything wrong with that, until gentrification happens. And then the people of color move out, and then it's the landscape looks totally different after that. So has anyone else had that experience where they traveled somewhere and saw a different kind of diversity for the first time and thought to yourself, huh, this is different? I get people tell me that when they travel here to the coast in Oregon, they're like, I didn't realize there was such a lack of diversity. And I'm like, well, there's diversity here, but it doesn't always have to do with color, right? And so what other ways can we identify diversity when there isn't a big population of people who look like me? How do we turn these conversations in 2021? That's a question I've been asking myself, like, where do I go from here? Where do we go from here? And I think that the biggest part is that we keep talking about it, that we keep having conversations, that we can learn and grow together. Is it going to be hurtful sometimes? Yes. Anytime we have to really look at ourselves beyond what we see in the mirror, it should hurt a little bit. I've been doing some workshops, and one of the things that I thought about was, what if equity, instead of bringing equal access to people, what if it was about bringing equal levels of discomfort to people, to help share in the discomfort that some have been uncomfortable in for so long? We always think about how to make it right and make it feel good. But these conversations and evaluations have to be a little bit uncomfortable, because that's what's going to help continue to uproot some of the things that we've been faced with, and really be able to start bringing some different sustainable solutions. I think one of the things I do want to share before, we've got about 15 minutes. I just want to say again, please call in. The number is 503. I've lost my place. Excuse me. 503-325-0010. KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM. KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. And streaming on the web at Coast Radio. And we have a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because as a child, I grew up hearing a song called Red and Yellow, Black and White. They are precious in His sight. Jesus loves little children of the world.
Yes.
So I grew up thinking that everybody was okay. Color didn't matter. And this year I've found out that color matters to so many people. I grew up in, I lived in Guam, so I've seen many shades of people. I've been around a lot of cultures, which I enjoy. And I wonder if we didn't have a cultural fair, because we have different people from different areas of the world here, and expose people to different food, different, you know, different experiences. That would help, because I think a lot of times people see something on TV and they think that's the way those people are.
Yes.
And they don't get it.
I agree. Thank you so much for calling in. And I'll share with you, when I was in high school, I was the president of the Multiculture Club at MiraCosta High School in Manhattan Beach. And that's one of the things that we did. We had a multicultural night that celebrated the diversity of our student population and their families, music, food, anything to help bring a shared experience around different cultures and traditions. I just remember that being one of the highlights each year of my high school experience. And so I do agree that being able to bring that diversity to the forefront and enjoy it together would definitely help in that experience.
Okay. Thank you.
Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays.
All right. We have another caller. Good morning.
Hello, Nikisha. It's Katya. I have two comments. I'm really enjoying your clarity and calm in this whole discussion. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
What an example. Two comments. I relate to you in Atlanta, I think it was, seeing everyone look
yes.
like you. I had the opposite experience, which is more rare for a white person. A good friend of mine had her 25th wedding anniversary, and in this whole big hotel ballroom, there was one other white person. And I grew up in Detroit, so I thought I was cool with that, but I haven't had that experience in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I knew half these people, and it still felt a little odd to me. So just try that on for yourself if you want to relate to somebody living in Oregon who has more skin, less tendency to sunburn.
Yeah. Can you dig in a little? Why was it different for you? What feelings do you remember that they brought out for you?
I felt like I stuck out. I felt different. I mean, really nice people, but my friend was so busy with her family and friends, other friends, that she didn't, I would have hung out with her, but she was the center. So I was on the periphery with people who were all related to her, but no one I had a direct friendship with besides my friend and her husband. So I knew her sweet daughters. So it was just feeling other, feeling the odd person mm-hmm. out, and wondering what people might think of me for looking that way. I grew up a lot in Latin America, and I wrap a shawl around my head in the winter to keep my ears warm, and I sometimes wonder if people think I'm Muslim and if I might have violence because of that. It worries me sometimes in certain pockets of Oregon, that being other and people projecting on you. And that wasn't really happening. That was more internal. And so that gave me a lot of empathy for someone who might be in an all-white crowd otherwise, you know, the fortitude that takes sometimes. And the other thing I wanted to say, for people who say there are no differences, there are lots of life differences. I, in honor of Sandra Bland, who was pulled over and beaten in jail yes. and died in her jail cell for not using her turn signal properly. I try to use it even when nobody's around, just to honor the fact, as a white person, I'll never get jailed or beat up for something like that. It'd make banner headlines if that happened to me instead of just business as usual. And I know in Detroit when we started driving that if the people in the front seat were brown or black, we're likely to get pulled over, even by black cops. And if one of my white friends was in the front seat and driving, it was less likely to happen. And it just became so regular, it was glaring. So I wanted to share that with people who don't know how many of those little things of going about daily business become difficult because of color. So you can often have different experiences because of people's reaction to you.
That's for sure. I will say, even for myself, I am mindful of how I'm driving, where I'm driving. And there are instances where I can point out to my husband, I don't have the privilege to run a red light. I don't have the privilege to do 50 miles over the posted speed limit, because the outcome may very well be different for me. And I try not to live with that fear, but I'm very aware that it's a 50-50 toss-up.
Yeah, and if you were male, it would be all the worse because of an unconscious fear factor.
That's for sure. And, you know, we've had that conversation. I remember growing up, the conversations that my stepdad had to have with my younger brother about what to do when he got pulled over by the police, if he ever, you know, if he did, and what that would look like. And, you know, hopefully conversations that as we really, really hopefully dig deep enough to grow out of this in the future, that those are conversations that hopefully won't be had.
Yes.
That's the future I look for.
Yes. To not have to worry about surviving the police.
And people.
When you're not doing anything particularly wrong.
That's for sure. You know, because we have to remember that police are still people too, right? I think about the police officer that the video shows being on the knee of George Floyd in that moment. And I thought to myself, that was someone's child. That is someone's child.
Huh.
You know? And so again, we all have to realize that we're all connected and that we should all care for that connection.
Yeah. And there are a lot of very excellent police officers.
Yes.
Locally, I saw Officer Mike come into the bank when somebody who was not usually there had inadvertently tripped an alarm. And he was so careful and so clear and so calm, yet so ready if there was trouble. I thought, this is the right mindset for a police officer.
Yes.
So, but there's too much immunity, too much protection, too little accountability for the bad apples.
And that's in not just in the police department, but I think in our education system, in our economic system, there's bad apples everywhere.
Yes, that's true. But most bad apples aren't carrying guns, at least.
Well, yes, hopefully. Hopefully not.
Hopefully. That's true. You can't count on that.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you and your mom's voice. It runs in the family. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you so much. And hopefully, maybe next year we can get back to doing our concerts. We've done two Christmas concerts here in Manzanita at the Hoffman Center. And hopefully at some point we'll get back to it. So thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Well, we're almost done for the day, for the month, and for the year. I want to thank you guys. This has been a new experience for me. This is a journey that I am learning in the moment. And so I thank you for your patience. I thank you for your grace, your compassion. I want to thank Graham and the Coast Radio family for welcoming me to this conversation and to this platform this year. I look forward to growing in these conversations together, building better communities. And before we leave, I want to just acknowledge all of my December babies. We have waited for 11 months and here we are. My birthday is a week from today. And so I just want to give a shout out to everyone celebrating a birthday this month. I also want to just give my heart for those who may be struggling during this time, who are having to isolate and not be near their family. I have been used to spending some holidays by myself over the last several years, and I'm okay with it. But I know that there are so many people who are not, and I'm thankful that I'm married now, and so I'm not all by myself this holiday season. And I know that makes a difference for me. And so I just really pray for each and every one of you, for the grace to continue to sustain all of us during this time. And so we're going to go out with one of my favorite songs that I listened to growing up. Radio station in Southern California owned by Stevie Wonder plays this all the time. It was written by Stevie Wonder to celebrate Dr. King's birthday that's coming up next month. But I want to do it to all my December birthdays and say a very special happy birthday to you and Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and all the stuff that I've missed in between. I love you and look forward to being with you next month in 2021.